The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning, and welcome to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We're located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania this morning. We're located where you are. This is a congregation that is dedicated to nourishing the spirit and transforming the world. I'm the Reverend Larry Pierce, minister at Thomas Paine UU Fellowship. I'm so happy you could join us today. Wherever you are in your life journey, wherever you are in your spiritual journey, whomever you love, whatever your gender, identity, or expression, we welcome you here today. If you are a visitor for the first time, you'll notice in the chat box, there'll be a link to our virtual visitor card. And this is an opportunity for you to request more information about our fellowship and also give us an opportunity to connect with you. So that'll be available in the chat box and feel free to fill it out anytime during the service. Our opening words this morning are a poem from Mary Oliver. For years, every morning, I drank from Blackwater Pond. It was flavored with oak leaves and also, no doubt, the feet of ducks. And always it assuaged me from the dry bowl of the very far past. What I want to say is the past. And the present is what your life is. And you are capable of choosing what that will be, darling citizen. So come to the pond or the river of your imagination or the harbor of your longing and put your lips to the world and live your life. So may it be, let's join together in worship, and Linda will now do our chalice lighting. Linda Stouffer.
Okay. And this is some In the Soft Light of This Flame by Reverend Scott Taylor. In the soft light of this flame, may our lives shimmer anew. May we notice new possibility in those relationships that seem lost. May the turning of the year give birth to a dream. May the emerging light pull a new story into view. May what is give way to what might be. May we believe again in the world we imagine. And now Preston will light the peace lamp.
And now I will light the peace lamp. Your response will be, and with all the people of the world. May peace be with us, and with all the people of the world.
Our gathering song is My Life Flows On in Endless Song. Please join in when you're ready to do so. The words will appear on the screen, and this is performed by our song leader, Christine Perry, and Isaac Strader is our accompanist. Let's sing together.
Tumult and the strife, I hear the music. storm can shake my inmost calm, while to that rock I'm clinging. Since love prevails in heaven and earth, how can I keep from singing? When tyrants tremble as they hear the bells of freedom ringing, when friends rejoice both far and near, how can I keep from singing? To prison cell and dungeon vile, our thoughts to them are winging. When friends by shame are undefiled, how can I keep from singing?
Conversation and story this morning is entitled, When Did You First Learn How to Pivot? Well, maybe it happened so long ago you might not recall, but most of us learned how to pivot when we learned how to walk. I learned recently that babies learn how to walk. When they're learning how to walk, they take about 2,400 steps an hour, enough to cross 7 football fields. And they fall on an average of about 17 times during that hour. So one researcher calculated it. I couldn't calculate it myself. I ran out of toes and fingers. But this means that within a single day, even if a baby only walked half of its waking hours, it would cover 46 football fields and fall 100 times in a single day. Now, I think I can really appreciate why parents of toddlers often feel so tired. Yes, while some of you were actually watching dog or cat videos this week to entertain yourself, I found myself watching some videos of infants and toddlers learning how to walk. I was curious about this research. And I could kind of see from my own eyes what they were talking about, this practice of walking and this practice of learning how to pivot. Even with all of this practice of walking, toddlers can really only change direction by a series of short rocking steps, adjusting their direction a little bit at a time. And eventually a toddler learns how to pivot smoothly on the ball of their foot, shifting from one direction and then moving in another direction. I realized that the capacity to pivot that most adults learn as toddlers is also more than just about learning how to walk. The capacity to pivot, to change directions, when the direction that we're moving in doesn't serve our aspirations, it doesn't take us in the direction that we need to go. When things happen in our life that are unexpected and we need to pivot in some new ways, that pivoting is more than just a physical activity. It's also a psychological and a spiritual one. So pivoting while walking, hopefully by this time, has become automatic for most of us. But being able to change directions and to be flexible and use all the psychological and spiritual capacities that we have to pivot in that way, that's an ongoing practice. Sometimes we're good at it, and sometimes we're not so good at it. Those who cannot pivot, really be flexible in their life and move in a direction that's more towards their aspirations or more in response to changes that are happening, often live a life of unnecessary suffering. And this can also cause unnecessary suffering for others as well. Think a moment about those times in your life when willingly or unwillingly you needed to pivot in some new directions. It could have been a simple shift, or it could be a major course correction. And during the next few minutes, if you want to type in the chat, like very briefly, a phrase or so of those times when you learned to pivot or needed to pivot, then that would give us all a chance to kind of share with you those memories as well. So savor that memory now when you had to pivot, and bless those memories now and all that has come about in your life because you were able to be flexible, to make a shift when it was needed. Some grow old and powerful and are resistant to these shifts, these pivots. Some grow old and resilient and are skillful in making these shifts. So in closing, I'm recalling the words of a teacher of mine who once said, "Shifts happen." He was right. But first, we have to be able to pivot if we're going to be able to start anew. So prayer is one way to pivot, a way to pivot within ourselves. And so I ask you to join me in this pastoral prayer for our nation and for our own lives. To all that is holy within us and between us, to God who is known by many names and no name at all, we come together this morning as a suffering and a bruised nation, so much suffering that we're tempted toward overwhelm and distraction, yet what is real weighs so heavily on our heart. We know that more than 373,000 people have died of COVID in this country and many more across the world. Countless thousands of loved ones have been left to grieve, sometimes suddenly and sometimes alone. Our individual hearts cannot hold all of this. We need to be able to come together and hold this together. There have been more than 22 million cases of COVID and so many more each day in this country and many more across the world. Our individual hearts cannot fathom this. We need to be able to come together and to hold these things together. We come together this morning as a suffering and a bruised nation. So much suffering that we're tempted towards overwhelm and distraction. Millions are unemployed, facing eviction, have no health care, and are going hungry. There's tremendous struggle and pain that we otherwise might not see unless we name it out loud, unless we name it in each other's company. Even if this is not our own predicament, each of us are called not to harden our hearts to those who need our assistance and our care, even now. In the middle of this very real and present suffering, this very real and so present suffering, there have been those in our country, dear God, who have distanced us from what really matters, who have distanced us from attending to these matters, who have sought to hold on to their power and to prop up their shallow ego through distortion and division. There are those who, in the midst of all of this real suffering, have incited others by promoting delusion towards destruction and senseless deaths that did not need to happen. So much suffering that we're tempted towards overwhelm and distraction. When there is so much that is real, so many opportunities to turn our energies towards the comforting and the hurting, towards consoling the grieving and feeding the hungry, serving those in need and in pain, so much energy we could give towards healing and not hate, so much energy towards what really matters. How can those in power succumb to promoting such delusion and to festering the flames of mistrust, hate, and division? Cause us not to heal too quickly the scars that were inflicted on our country's psyche this past week, O Holy One. Images of broken windows, barriers and doors being stormed, people being terrorized, images of flags with one name only flying over our capital. These are the visible signs of what happens when words have been used to foster division and delusion. Cause us to not be complicit any longer, pretend it is only politics when it is much more, so much more. Those scars will linger until we can truly find the paths of acknowledging what is real and not just imagined. Until we can name that these delusionary distractions have gone too far down the path of destruction. Set our hearts again on what really matters. Turn our feet toward the real and the necessary. Turn our hearts towards the suffering and the insecure, so that together we may not heal through minimizing, but only through recognizing when evil is allowed to grow like weeds among us and entangle our hearts and encumber our spirits. Help us to claim that indeed we want to be starting anew, so that together we may imagine a world that should be, where we let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. So may it be. Amen. And now we'll have a visual meditation. So let's join in that visual meditation.
Thank you.
My sermon this morning is entitled, I'd Be Starting Anew. During the last week of August, about 15 years ago, I remember being on a family vacation on the Jersey Shore. It was a time away, a time to vacate, so to speak, to leave behind all of the usual duties and concerns. Except that week was the week of August 23rd, 2005. You might recall that that week was when Hurricane Katrina ravished the New Orleans area, and perhaps few of us could let go of the concerns that we saw so vividly presented to us on our televisions. More than the physical devastation on full display was the subsequent tragedy of lives lost because help could not arrive in time, of people trapped on their rooftops, drowning in their homes, and finally crowding into a convention center, waiting for help, food, water, rescue, all that seemed so uncoordinated. And it seemed to go on forever. You see, for a period of my life until about fifth grade or so, I had lived in New Orleans. So I felt a particular kind of connection with the physical and human devastation that was occurring during that time. I cried. I was angry at the lack of coordinated response, and I was distraught. It was a sad moment in our country's history, exposing the raw inequities and the blatant inadequacies that we would probably rather not know about or even remember. I went to church on that Sunday of that week. I went to this Episcopal church in this vacation town. I wanted to not be alone with my grief. I wanted to pray. I wanted to rail at the injustices occurring. I wanted to find a way to hold all that was happening in a way that made more sense than obsessive television watching. I have to say that probably going to church was the worst decision I made that week. You see, in the service, there was barely a syllable mentioning of what was transpiring in New Orleans, just some mumbled one-sentence prayer. But what astounded me even more was that the priests didn't mention it at all. My own grief and dismay pushed me beyond my characteristic politeness, and I decided to speak with the priest following the service. I did so in as curious a voice as I could muster, but I'm sure there were tones of judgment that rang through as well. I asked him, "Why did you speak about what is happening in New Orleans?" I really can't tell you how he replied, because I recall that he had some principle of not speaking about current events or something like that. And that's when my clouds of judgment begin to fog my own memory of the experience. Well, I thought of the experience this week. You see, this week I was ahead of the game. I had a running start on my sermon, which is entitled, I'd Be Starting Anew, by Tuesday. But then Wednesday happened. I first thought, I'll weave this week's events in somehow. I'll be able to do both what I had prepared, but also fit this in. And then the more I thought about it, the more I came to realize, no matter how attached I was to my sermon, I would indeed be starting anew in real time. How could I, with integrity, chastise this priest so many years ago and take us on a vacation this morning from what really matters, from what's been happening in our country this week? But then I struggled with what would happen if I did say something about this week. Perhaps, like me, you were trained by your parents or teachers with that phrase, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. Anyone else besides me learned that phrase? So I kind of got curious about that phrase as I was preparing for this service. And thanks to the web, I discovered that at least one source is that great wisdom figure, Disney. You see, in the film Bambi, after Thumper says something mean about Bambi, Thumper's mother asks, "What did your father tell you this morning, Thumper?" Sheepishly, the young rabbit replies, "Son, if you can't say something nice, don't say nothing at all. If only we lived in the wonderful world of Disney, this might actually make sense. But we don't. I can't really think of something nice to say about the attack on the Capitol building, the insurrection of this past week, and I can't simply ignore it. I recognized that it was so important for us to stay in the real world when so much that has been unreal has been happening for so long. So the events of this week were devastating, and there's nothing nice to say. Some people think that because political figures are involved in the events this week, that this is about politics. I disagree. Political figures are certainly involved, but this is not just about politics. This is about ethics masquerading as politics. The poet Mary Oliver said it more sharply than I did. She wrote in a footnote to her poem on the empire that when people talk about how we should stay above politics, they're really saying, pay no heed to the common good. Pay no heed to the common good. As far as I'm concerned, the common good deserves our persistent and our consistent attention if we are to be a religious community. When something threatens the common good, as the incitement and the insurrection of this past week do, then we have no choice but to speak up and to act. Otherwise, we should retire our Torah scrolls. We should put our religious text and our religious history in the trash can. We should use the underside of whatever paper our Unitarian Universalist principles are printed on as merely a placemat. We should never bother to open the doors of our sanctuary again unless we can consistently and persistently advocate for the common good and speak out against those times in which the common good is diminished. We must speak out, or otherwise, as our Jewish and our Christian scriptures tell us, if these keep silent, the stones will cry out. Speaking about our Unitarian Universalist principles, if we dare to say that we affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person, then we need to do this diligently and wisely moving forward. If we translate this principle into more than just an ideal and understand it as a practice, then we have to be more and more vigilant in the practicing of this, because we haven't been during these last 5 years or so. Sometimes we think that this principle means that anything goes. Every opinion is okay. And this essentially means that we don't dare to take a courageous moral stand when circumstances demand that we do. On Wednesday, January 6th, the Feast of the Epiphany, I had my own epiphany about all of this year. As I watched with horror and terror as our current president incited an insurrection blocks from the Capitol, repeated some of the same distortions about the election results, and telling the crowds he had been amassing on his social media to come to Washington to be strong and not weak, as he told them, "I'll be with you," and then drove in his protected limousine in the opposite direction. As I watched the barricades being pushed aside, windows broken, congresspeople and staff being ushered away to a safe place, cries of "Where is Mike Pence?" echoing through the halls, a person shot, as I learned after the fact of the death now of about 5 people of pipe bombs and Molotov cocktails being discovered, as I heard Trump say nothing, and then in his latest video, after all of these horrendous events, maintain his position that the election was rigged, and telling his followers this was only the beginning. I had an epiphany. I say, my friends, that we've been too naive, too complicit for too long. So I'd say if televangelist Pat Robertson can declare that Trump, who lost by more than 7 million votes, who lost close to 60 different lawsuits contesting the fact, was still declaring that he won the election, that if Reverend Robertson, a staunch supporter of Trump, could say that Trump lives in an alternate reality, my epiphany was that I could also say the same. And it's more dangerous than that. My epiphany was that this is not about politics. This is about delusion and the dangerous use of rhetoric to maintain power and to incite violence. We've seen this phenomenon before in other places in the world and at other times in history. If we are to start anew, we must wake up. We must look at it all with wide open eyes and an open capacity, a capacity to open ourselves up to brutal and horrific truths. We need to be able to call it what it is and move forward differently and move forward with a strong ethical stance. In his sermon, Tears We Cannot Stop, a sermon to white people, sociology professor Reverend Michael Eric Dyson concludes, "The time is at hand for reckoning with the past, recognizing the truth of the present, and moving together to redeem the nation for our future." And that's the task I feel that lies before us in the weeks and the months ahead, to redeem our nation for our future. But such a task requires that we do some reckoning ourselves. If we do not act now, Reverend says, there may be no future. I believe there is a reckoning that needs to occur. There's a truth that we must recognize and that we must move forward differently if we are to indeed redeem our future. One way to move forward differently came to light on the Epiphany 2021 through these events I've described. We've all experienced this past week. No longer must we allow ourselves to be taunted, titillated, tortured, and twittered by the incendiary language of any person in power. As we move forward, we must recognize this language and call it out sooner, call it out consistently before it leads to horrific ends. This is a religious task. This is a necessary task because we can see how this incendiary language can actually play out in real life and in real lives. We can no longer pretend we're being nice or tolerant of differences when we fail to call this behavior out. In his book, Words on Fire, The Power of Incendiary Language and How to Confront It, Helio Fred Garcia traces the dangers of this incendiary language in history. And he includes Donald Trump as one of his examples. Garcia's book includes a history of such rhetoric and identifies a kind of a playbook consisting of 12 forms of communication that typically precede genocides and other acts of mass violence. I found the book really illuminating. I ended up reading it all in one day. It just made me understand more clearly and more directly what we've been going through as a country. And it's so important that we name it and acknowledge it in order to be able to start anew. Garcia gives examples of how the Nazis used all 12 of these forms of communication. The Rwandan Hutu used 10 of those forms of communication to fuel the Rwandan genocide. And he claims that Trump uses all 12. Garcia points out how this language, when it goes on unchecked, triggers lone wolves to commit violence. And we've seen this again and again, too many times. If we really care about the inherent worth and dignity of every human being as Unitarian Universalists, we need to become more astutely aware of this rhetoric and the danger of it. We need to hold our leaders accountable and each other accountable when we repeat such atrocious language. Much earlier than we did, we need to do it. And much more consistently, we need to do it moving forward. I can only share briefly in this sermon these 12 forms of dangerous communication that unfortunately have become so commonplace. But recognizing this phenomenon is my hope that we can recognize it moving forward whenever it shows up again. I really don't have the time to illustrate every single form, but sadly, many of us can think of our own examples if we've been really paying attention the last 5 years. So let me go over that list with you now. And perhaps there's a way I could share more descriptions of it through our web vine. So incendiary language, according to the research of Professor Garcia, is characterized in this way. It dehumanizes people. It demonizes and delegitimates people. It scapegoats people. It picks on certain groups and ethnicities as a public health threat. It attributes a violent motive to people. It severely exaggerates risks. It characterizes others as having sinister identities. It promotes conspiracies. It discredits information and truth, fake news. It conflates the leader with the state so that any attack of a leader is considered an attack on our nation. It juxtaposes a menacing image with a person. And one of the most extreme example, one of the examples of this was Trump's tweet of a Muslim woman speaking with an image of the twin towers juxtaposed behind her and the words, "We will never forget." My friends, I don't think we'll be able to start anew unless we can acknowledge this rhetoric when it occurs and hold our future leaders and ourselves accountable. There are examples when this has occurred. When John McCain was confronted about how people in his campaign rallies were calling Obama a Muslim or making all kinds of attributes about Muslims, he stopped them. He interrupted that language rather than allow it to continue and do its poisonous work. We've seen the dangers of this, not just this week, but in the managing of the COVID-19 virus, when disinformation about the dangers of the virus were proliferated, where people were decided not to wear a protective mask as some kind of crazy symbol of allegiance to a false ideology. We've seen it where a leader gathered large crowds, mostly unmasked, for political rallies, disregarding the local restrictions on this. These, my friends, are not political issues. Let's not pretend that they are. They are moral and ethical ones. They have had consequences on the common good, on our common health, and on our well-being. We don't honor the worth and dignity of every person when we tolerate this kind of rhetoric and behavior. So in order to start anew, we need to be less naive, more vigilant, and more consistent with our ethical principles, our UU principles, and put them into practice and not merely enshrine them as platitudes, but we need to use them when we need to. We need to speak out when necessary. As Unitarian Universalists, we also affirm and promote the use of the democratic process. And this principle has deep roots in our faith and our congregational polity. Here too, we need to be more vigilant as we move forward. Lorian Alexandra, in a recent speech at Antioch University, gave us this warning, even before the events of this week. She said, "Scholars tell us that democracies no longer end with a bang, like a revolution or military coup, but with a whimper. The slow, steady weakening of critical institutions like the judiciary and the press, the relentless repetition of lies until they become accepted as truth, the scapegoating of the other and labeling those who protest as enemies of the state. We see it happening before our eyes, and this is how democracies die. It's a form of hell." So I had my epiphany this week. I recall, as one of my colleagues wrote this week, that the wise men, the wise ones, knowing the threat that Herod posed, did not return home the way that they arrived. They had to find a new way home. And so we too need to find a new way from January 6, 2021, a new way home to that which matters, to that which deserves our deep care and compassion. I would say that that new way means to be alert of incendiary language and its dangers, less tolerant of intolerance, holding accountable our leaders, and having a more stalwart defender, being more stalwart defenders of democracy, even in the subtle ways in which it begins to erode. We can no longer be naive about the dangers of hate and hateful speech. We can no longer be accepting of the politics of untruth and pretend it's just politics. Just as Mary Oliver declared that politics is only avoided if we don't want to focus on the common good, I believe there's wisdom from another poet, Denise Levertov, in her poem, Beginners. And I'll read this poem as my closing. Beginners by Denise Levertov. From too much love of living, hope and desire set free, even the weariest river winds somewhere to the sea. But we have only begun to love the earth. We have only begun to imagine the fullness of life. How could we tire of hope? So much is in bud. How can desire fail? We have only begun to imagine justice and mercy, only begun to envision how it might be to live as siblings with beast and flower, not as oppressors. Surely our river cannot already be hastening into the sea of non-being. Surely it cannot drag in the silt all that is innocent. Not yet, not yet. There is too much broken that must be mended, too much hurt we have done to each other that cannot yet be forgiven. We have only begun to know the power that is in us if we would join our solitudes in the communion of struggle. So much is unfolding that must complete its gesture. So much is in bud. So much is in bud. Amen. So this is a time in our service where we take a moment to listen to our own hearts and what is stirring in our own hearts on this day. Perhaps you are holding a joy. Perhaps you are holding a sorrow or a concern. So allow that joy or that sorrow to be embraced in the chamber of your own heart. Welcome it, hold it, be with it. Perhaps there is something from today's service or sermon that lingers in you. Take a moment to be with it for just a little while longer. Following the musical interlude, we'll have an opportunity for those of you who want to share that joy, that concern, or that gleaning from the sermon. Let's remember to be brief so that others have an opportunity to share if they want to. Let's remember that each of us will have our own unique experiences, and we don't have the right to discount another's experience if it's different than our own. Let's honor one another through first listening to our own heart and then opening up a brief space to hear from one another, from those who want to speak. So let's listen to the musical interlude, and then the instructions will be given for sharing. Now Linda Stouffer will extinguish our chalice. And let's join together. Thank you, Linda. Let's join together in saying our unison closing words, which you'll see appear on the screen. Or if you have a order service, you can refer to that. These are by Theodore Parker, a Unitarian minister, a very strong advocate of abolitionism during his time. Let's read together. Be ours a religion which, like sunshine, goes everywhere. Its temple, all space. Its shrine, the good heart. Its creed, all truth. Its ritual, works of love. Its profession of faith, divine living. Our closing song is I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free, and we'll sing along, and the lyrics will appear on the screen.
All I'm longing to give, I wish I